guys, this is Austin.
And John.
And welcome to another episode of the Meat Justics podcast. I did have to jump in there really quickly because the last time I think we did this, you stole the intro from me.
Well, speaking of that, it's been a while since you've been here. You've been off gallivanting around doing Lord knows what.
I know. I look at my schedule and I'm like, oh, I'm going to like be here and be able to do everything for a while. And then all of a sudden it's like, nope, can't.
Here come things. Well, we're also slowly just pushing out the door. So less, no, we don't need you for that. We're good.
That's okay.
If you want to stop in, you're okay. But we don't need you.
As long as I get to come in on like good episodes when you have cheese and prosciutto.
Yeah. And mystery meat over
mystery
there.
Mystery meat. Yeah.
So
do you want to do that sooner or later?
Let's jump right into that because I have a couple of objections.
So first off, do you think that's cheddar cheese or mozzarella or jack?
It's cheddar. And it's been in the snack stick for at least 4 years.
It's cheddar.
It's mostly frozen still.
But it is like so freezer burned, it's now like white.
Yes. It is very, very light yellow. That is not a yellow that's going to make your tan stand out nice like a yellow shirt. This is. All right. So this is fairly frozen. It is a snack stick. I'm assuming it's pork, but we'll find out here.
Oh, you don't have to eat that piece, but okay. Well, because that is like the most freezer burnt piece that's there. But my whole idea was if I'm going to have a meat for John to try to guess what it is today, I dug through multiple freezers and basically every freezer we have in the building to find the most freezer burned package of whatever I could. And I thought that would have enough flavor gone out of it and the freezer burn disrupt more flavor, and it sat so long that it would be difficult for John to guess.
It tastes like an unpleasant nothing. Like
that is
I don't know
exactly
how to describe
what
that,
I was going
but
for.
But it's like unpleasant, but doesn't have an identifiable taste. Mm. Okay. Ooh, that one has a little bit more. God, what is that?
I doubt you actually guessed this. I don't think you'll be able to do it. I do think I played a little dirty and the freezer burn thing is kind of sketchy, but I'm one of those people that everything's competition to the extreme, and you do what you have to do to win. You
whether
play
it's cheating
to
or not,
win the game.
Okay, like initially, it tastes more like a breakfast sausage than it does a snack stick. That's just from probably 5 years of deterioration. Doesn't have a strong flavor. And unlike you, I won't resort to looking at our snack sticks page. Doesn't have a strong flavor. Okay, so we've got possibility of it being ranch. It's not any of the really hot ones. I know I'm going to get shot here. I know it's not ranch, but I can't think. It tastes vaguely like the fajita, but we haven't had fajita long enough for that to be fajita. Tex-Mex. Nope. I take that back. It's not Tex-Mex. That was close. Yeah, this is annoying. No, we haven't had that one long enough either, I don't think. All right, I am going to go Tex-Mex.
No.
What is it?
Not even close. Barbecue.
That's barbecue?
Uh-huh.
That doesn't taste anything like barbecue.
Yeah. I mean, it does to
not
me, since I know what it is and I was trying it, but it's very hidden. But I think this is a really good example of making sure you package your product right and you don't let it sit in the freezer for 3 years.
Is that
2 years?
Did you check the date on it?
It's like 2 years.
Where'd you get it from?
The bottom of your freezer.
Okay. This one?
Yeah.
So what that is then is it's barbecue jerky that we made snack sticks out.
Technically jerky. Yeah.
Okay. Would I have had to have guessed barbecue jerky, or would just barbecue be enough?
I don't know.
Depends on how triggery you are.
If you would have said barbecue, I probably would have given it to you.
Okay.
But I would have brought up that you still got it technically wrong because it was barbecue jerky. But
I still would have shot you. Like, I'm just saying, I wouldn't blame you for turning a dirty trick on me because if you gave me barbecue, I would have shot you.
Okay.
So.
Also, it was full disclosure on everything. The package was not, it was vac packed, but it was no longer
vacuum. Had lost it.
It had lost it, and there was like an inch of ice inside that thing.
Awesome.
So the ice you saw on here when I brought it out, no, most of it had melted. It was freezer burned bad.
So to be fair, there's been a couple of times when we've not turned the freezer right back on. Go ahead.
Oh, isn't it up to my discretion as to when I shoot?
We haven't turned the freezer back on. Ha ha, you forgot the safety was on.
Yeah, but now you got to wait for the anticipation again.
So we've left it off for weekends before. It's not
really.
Yeah, so that's not all the packaging's fault. It's definitely a little bit the packaging's fault. But yeah, we've made some mistakes there. We were talking about getting a smart thing, right? Plug, smart plug.
Dang it. Yeah. I forgot. I had two of those in my office. And before I left town, like last week, week before, I was looking at it, and where I was going, I was like, oh, I might be able to use these out there. I was like, I don't know why I have these at the office. So I took them. So they're back at home. So I will try to remember to bring those back in.
Well, here's the deal. I mean, my understanding was that once that freezer back there got up and running, we were getting this taken away from us.
Maybe, potentially.
Okay. So, I mean, we've kind of prepared for that. So when it has to go, you won't get any kicking and screaming from us. Okay. Okay. All right. So this is kind of a food-centric episode. First, here I have some of the lovely duck prosciutto that I made. This was me wanting to make prosciutto, but not wanting to wait 12 to 18 months. So duck is something that's, duck breast is somewhat commonly made into prosciutto.
Now, is this from a duck that you like beat with a club in your backyard?
Nope. My dog got it.
And, okay.
So there's, you're gonna see some teeth marks in there, but it's not that bad. No, we just bought an entire duck from, I think, McFarland's. And then I cut out the duck breasts. Cooked up the duck legs were really good, like really good. So we cut out the duck breast, put it in a container, put a layer, full layer of salt down, put the duck on top of that, and then totally covered it in salt the entire thing. Let it sit in there in the fridge for 24 hours, took it off, rinsed it, probably needed to rinse it a little bit better, to be honest. Then we just gave it a light dusting with just some pepper, wrapped it in collagen sheets, and then hung it in the drying cabinet. But the only feature we used of the drying cabinet was the temperature. We didn't control humidity at all. And I trying some stuff with that before we get too deep into dry curing stuff, because I know most people at home aren't going to have a way to adjust that. They may or may not have a way to monitor it, but they won't have a way to adjust it. Anyways, so it sat in there for 7 days, hanging in there at 12 degrees Celsius, which is 53.6 degrees Fahrenheit, and took it out yesterday during the live stream, ate the first piece, waited 24 hours. I feel totally fine, which was funny because it was hot. You know, when it in here, once the air stops moving, it gets real hot. And I started like sweating, and everyone's like, it's the duck, it's the duck. But no, duck seems perfectly fine.
You know, if we'd probably be able to sit in here and be more comfortable if we could turn the portable air conditioner on over there. But I don't think our audio team is quite qualified, and they're good enough to really be able to remove that from the background.
Shouldn't we just say it's their problem? Hey, why don't you have a microphone? No, supposed to be. It just, I absolutely love prosciutto to a ridiculous amount. This was a quick, easy way for me to get some, get a small batch of it underneath my belt. The end goal is hang something for full 12 months. I just don't know where I'm going to be able to put that and not have people pissed at me for taking up something for 12 months.
If all you need is temperature, I mean, it's just a matter of...
No, with prosciutto, like with a ham, we're going to need temperature and humidity.
Okay. So yeah, you want something big there. Yeah. Maybe someday, maybe somebody listening to this will know of something and can point us in direction. But I've talked with, I want to say, two different places about carrying like a dry curing chamber type of thing. One of them was really promising, and then it just kind of all just fizzled out. But everything that we'd have to do would be imported from somewhere.
Okay.
The last one I was looking at was like Australia. So it's not like a Chinese product.
Right.
Because that does make me kind of nervous. Sometimes some of the stuff we've gotten from China that is weird oddball stuff, just not quite the same.
Sure.
I don't know.
Yeah. So you're worried about the, because a lot of things can go wrong during a dry curing thing. And if you don't have, if it's not actually holding the humidity it's supposed to, or even if it's just reading wrong, so you're making adjustments when you don't need to, things can definitely go wrong. And I mean, you, for the most part, you'd be able to tell. Like you open it, if there's a foul odor, you know you have problems. If you see mold growing in there that isn't good mold, you know something has gone wrong. The big problem or whatever with that, in my mind at least, is the possibility of ruining somebody's, something that they've been working on for basically a year. Like that's what I would really care about. Like if somebody called up and said, hey, just opened my Walton's dry cured, you know, home chamber and the prosciutto that's been in there since last December is totally ruined.
Yeah.
That would not make me happy. I'd feel really bad.
Yeah. That's going to happen. And that's, I mean, you're going to run into that issue anytime you're doing anything dry cured though. Every now and then something's probably not going to work right.
Yeah.
And you're going to lose a bunch of time on it. But in my opinion, dry cured stuff is so good. It's worth that risk. It's worth that wait. As long as you don't take the risk of going, this might be bad. I think I'll eat it anyways, even though it has a funky smell. You don't want to get the food poisoning off of that.
Here's the deal though. That would definitely be something we would do. Like, it's not that bad, guys. Like hold on, talk for a second.
I don't think that can hold up. There's nothing in my book that's going to be like, well, it's not that bad. Because even if it's a little bad, you're going to have a $2 experience at minimum, if not a hospital stay.
And I guess you can't really see it anymore. It's gone too dark. This was from the Lomo we did when I started with some of the dry cured stuff a couple years ago. The very end of it had a weird pocket at the bottom where air could get into the middle more than anywhere else, and it just killed an entire section of it. So some of this is green in there. It's not real obvious there, but I keep that more than anything else to remind myself that it's not worth eating bad stuff.
You know, I don't know that I would keep this in the fridge. Technically, there is still air transmission.
Seriously?
Oh, yeah. Everything has some sort of air transmission rate to it. That's why, like, when you're looking at like prepping and long-term food storage, you don't see people keeping stuff in a vacuum pouch like we sell. They're using Mylar bags.
Yeah.
Because Mylar has metal like infused in the bag. And that has a even higher moisture and air locking ratio, whatever you want to call it. I think there's an actual term for it, but.
Okay, so if we can't eat this, Patrick, I'll give you $10 to eat all of it. If we can't keep this in the fridge.
I think that might fall under a workman's comp claim somehow. That
all right. missed. Won't get thrown out. All right. No, so the next,
I don't think you're legitimately going to get sick by it having something come out of it. So,
so the next thing on our food episode, I absolutely love those cheese crisps, the bags or whatever at the grocery store. The Asiago cheddar one, I cannot eat that fast enough. But we were talking about this before. They're too expensive.
Yeah, like $8 for like an ounce.
And I'm going to eat it all on the car ride home, like most of the time. That sits right up there with me. I open it and just. So this is super cheap Walmart shredded cheese, mild cheddar or maybe sharp cheddar, whatever, that I added some vegetable oil to get it to stick together, because I tried it without that first, and no matter how hard I like pressed, it just sprung right back into its initial shape.
Do you use shredded cheese?
Yeah.
Okay, next time you need to do block. Shredded cheese has like an agent on the outside of it so it doesn't clump.
Oh
yeah.
Okay,
use a block and it'll clump much better.
Okay, all right. So there is another thing with this is our butter garlic seasoning, and I broke one of the major rules with that seasoning, which is one of the few ones that I think has a rule that a little goes a long way. You, I think, are going to love this. It is really nice and salty.
Perfect.
So go ahead, give it a shot. No, they didn't get as crisp.
I can like chew the salt.
Yes. But I'm pretty sure that's because these don't have sodium bicarbonate in them. And all of those ones do.
Eating half of that crisp, I think I just had my week's worth of salt intake.
Yours or a normal person's?
Normal person.
Okay. Yeah, there's a way too much salt in there. So when I do it again, it's going to be not cheddar.
You can literally see the salt in this. It is insane.
Let me see. What, like the kind of reflective stuff? Mm-hmm. No, that's oil.
No, there's little white dots. Oh, there was a pocket there. Strong.
Yeah.
It's no, good, though.
Totally did not even think about how strong that seasoning is because I tell people that all the time. Great seasoning, little goes a long way because you can ruin a dish with that. I've done it before with chicken. So I will continue to give that a shot. That might take over from my weekly live streams. I was trying just like random things you would have around the house. Well, kind of. At least we would have around here to resharpen one of those white ceramic blades. And finally found something that I like. That is the 6-inch diamond trihone. And I am not going to say I like it as much as the true hone, but I will say I really like it. I brought it home and did it to all my knives. It is like super soothing, like almost brings out the little bit of autistic in me, which is like, is really satisfying. And I just keep doing it.
How many times do you have to like pass it over?
So it depends on obviously how dull the knife is. If it just needs a little touch up, I just do 6 on each one. And I don't even know if I'm supposed to be using the Arkansas sandstone on the last one for these, but I am. So it's got a coarse, a fine, and the Arkansas sandstone. What I like about this is I can really easily put a different edge on my chef's knife than on my boning knives.
True. Yeah.
And that is like, you can do that with a true hone too, but you have to know where you're starting from and where you're adjusting to change the bevels. On this, it's literally as easy as I want to hold it this angle, I want to hold it at this angle. So it is really easy. I may eventually take out one of the larger ones because 6 inches feels a little bit too small. I'm working the blade too much to get it across, but no, I think the plan was to give that thing away on a live stream, but I just fell in love with it.
I don't know this and I probably should, but I assume there's like a ratio of the length of the knife to the length of the stone that's going to work best. Like
yeah.
If you tried to do a 12-inch knife on that, probably not going to work as
really
well.
Really tough.
It's probably from like a small knife up to a 6-inch bone
for that
knife.
One.
Yeah.
I'm reasonably certain. So like with a steel, if you have an 8-inch knife, you want a 10-inch steel. I imagine it would be similar with that. Maybe it's not like you need the extra 2 inches, but I am doing 8 inches on a 6-inch stone and I am having to work it like too quickly to bring it back. I think to get like optimal results. Still, it's absolutely awesome. It's a great, great way to sharpen your knives, and it's something cheap and that people can do at home. So
very cool.
On to meat matters.
Meat matters it is. So the first one on here, I honestly like didn't even really read the whole article. I just thought it would be worth bringing up because we've talked about this in the past.
Yep.
And now it won't let me open it again.
Oh, we're talking about the Smithfield pork?
Yeah. There we go. So yeah, we've talked about some price fixing lawsuits that have gone through. Smithfield just got raked through the coals and they have to pay $83 million in a pork price fixing claim.
How much is that to them though? The Redskins Washington football team just got a $10 million fine. And I told Patrick that's like him getting fined $5.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's enough that still makes a difference. But at the end of the day, it doesn't necessarily like hurt them that bad.
No, I doubt that'll move their bottom line much at all, if at all. But whatever, something to try to slap their hands and, you know, don't do this. You have anything else on that one?
Just as like a comparison, JBS had reached a settlement in their pork pricing lawsuit and said that they had a $13 million settlement in a class action suit, and they had a $25.5 million in a larger class action suit. So they still had a chunk, but
yeah,
still a lot less than what Smithfield got slapped with. So this next story, this one, as soon as I saw it, it popped out ahead of everything else because it scares the crap out of me. But you can get a disease by getting bit by the Lone Star tick that makes you allergic to red meat.
Yep.
And that just terrifies me because I don't know what I would do if I could not eat red meat.
It's called the alpha gal syndrome. And I've been trying to stay at least somewhat up on it. This article says it's on the rise, which obviously is scary. I mean, I'm sure I wouldn't actually lose my job if I got that, but it would absolutely affect what I do. Like if I all of a sudden couldn't eat red meat.
Everything you made and tested with would have to be like chicken.
Or somebody else would have to try it.
Mm-hmm.
Like that would be a serious pain in the butt. Now, the really good news that's coming about somewhat recently about alpha gal is that it doesn't appear to be like a life sentence.
I did see something about
they're
that
saying
too, yeah.
Like some people get over it as quickly as 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
And people seem to be getting over it. The outer limit is 5 years. So yes, it's terrible. That would be a really hard 5 years to get through. But it doesn't seem like it's like Lyme disease where once you have it, you have it.
Yeah. When we were playing in the golf tournament fundraiser,
mm-hmm.
I got a tick on me.
Did you really?
Yeah. And I think I talked about that on like a podcast or live stream or something, but it was on my arm. I thought it was a spider. Yes. So I hit it. Nothing happened. And I'm like, oh crap, trying to get it off. Then it bit my finger as I was trying to flick it and I couldn't get it off. But that, like, anytime I have a tick on me, like my mind immediately goes to, no, don't take away my red meat.
But it's so just a couple of good things to ease your mind on that is tick has to be attached to you for over 24 hours to transmit. And I believe the same is true with Lyme disease, but please don't hold me to that. So getting a quick little tick bite. I had the same thing. I was over in the trees by my house and two fell down, jumped off a tree and got on my head. And one of them actually bit and I like had to almost struggle with it to get it off, but it literally had just bit me. So I was fine. But I pulled one off my dog the other day, man. Oh, it had been on there for a bit.
You need to give them flea and tick stuff.
We do.
Okay.
We do. But it had been on there for a bit. Feel bad.
Yeah.
Poor guy.
It doesn't.
It was down by his man bits too. So
technically.
But I don't look down there a lot.
I mean, they don't hurt.
Right. So. But still.
It's just creepy,
man,
and gross
nasty.
Feeling.
Yeah. Terrible little useless things. I mean, what are they good for? Possums, right? They're good to feed possums. That's the only thing. And I could do without possums for sure.
I could do without a lot of different animals. I unfortunately or fortunately, I don't know. I moved like a little over a year ago. I don't live like in the middle of town anymore. Mm-hmm. I live a few miles outside of town with a few acres around the house. And now like there's so many more animals and insects and stuff that's just I don't like. The worst of it to me is snakes. I hate snakes. So many snakes.
What kind of snakes do you see out there a lot?
I don't know. There's
big scary ones.
No, there's nothing I've seen that's like that's dangerous at all. I would have expected to see like more garter snakes,
mm-hmm.
but they're mostly like a rat snake or something. I don't know. There's a couple that are like more water snakes.
Yeah. So the most common one around here at least seems to be the diamondback water snake. So it has the diamond pattern on its back and they are just super mean. Like there's a couple of them that have gotten into my garage. One got into my house
house.
Yeah. We first moved in. I was still working in customer service. My wife called me crying. She's like, we still had the cat at that point. And she's like, you have to come home. There's a snake in the basement. Me and Moose here are going to like drive away. I'm like, all right, I'll be home. So I go down in the basement and it's literally not as thick around as my pinky. And it's like about this long.
Yeah.
So I was like, whatever. I just grabbed it, threw it in a bucket. But like as I was grabbing it, because I just used a shovel to like get it in there, it bit that shovel like crazy.
Oh yeah.
And then I was thinking on my way up to let it out, I'm like, you already know how to get in my house and you're an a-hole. I'm just gonna kill you. So I killed it. And then I went on a absolute massacre of snakes down by my pond. Like I'd go down fishing literally with my fishing pole and my nine iron, and I just lop their heads off like constantly. And then we didn't see as many snakes for some odd reason for a while, but they are making a comeback. Last year I had to get one out of my garage and I killed that one because it again was biting at everything. My neighbor just had to do the same. So yeah, it does seem like they're becoming more around, but that is the snake that I always see is the Western. I think they call it a Western diamondback water snake. The best snake, like I'm not a snake person at all, but when we first moved here and moved into that house, I saw what's called a yellow-bellied racer.
What is that?
Like a really light gray top with a bright yellow bottom. And it was fast. Like I knew why they called it a racer. Gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous snake. Like the only snake I've ever looked.
There's no such thing.
Dude, if you saw it, like it's the colors were so, like it looked like an awesome color scheme for a car. Like if you got a Camaro that was like this sweet gray on top and yellow underneath, it was really cool. I don't remember how we got on that, but
I don't know.
Yeah, in general, just I don't care for snakes, but I'm also, they serve a purpose. I mean, they keep the rodents down. They keep all sorts of things down.
I'd probably rather have rodents than snakes though.
But rodents are dirty. Your dad would be the opposite. Too. Your dad does not like
rodents. My dad and I are total opposites. Yeah. And we live very close to
each other. Each other out.
So he's trying to save the snakes. I'm trying to kill the snakes. Anytime I find them in my yard, I lop their heads off. My wife yesterday was weed eating and there was one little section that we had somehow skipped a couple times. So it was like some real tall grass up in a corner.
Yeah.
She was going in that and snake was in there, out. Ended up on her foot and it was flopping around and she was freaking out trying to get it off. And then she killed it with the weed eater.
I think that's probably like a high percentage of snakes, how they get killed is getting run over with a mower or weed eater or something like that. I've killed plenty of them with that back up in New York where there aren't even as many snakes.
Yeah.
I don't know. My wife says she saw a white snake in our tree line one day. I think she probably saw a regular snake and just got so scared that she lost the ability to perceive color.
Could have just been albino.
How long is an albino snake going to last? Certainly not to the point where it's, I would imagine not to the point where it's going to be mature.
I don't know.
I think she was just crazy. All right. Anything else for yours?
Nope.
Okay. Couple ones. This one is really hits close to home for me. It says, annoyed by a loud chewer, the problem is you. So this is a article by the Wall Street Journal saying that therapists recommend that if you're annoyed by a friend or loved one's chewing, like the loud smacking of the lips, they're not going to change. So you have to get okay with it. And sitting next to you for as long as I have, I understand what this article is about.
Wait, do I chew with my mouth open?
I can't change you. So I have accepted it. And this brought this whole, no, I'm just kidding.
I was going to say, I'm sitting here thinking like, do I not?
No, nope.
I'm not really sure.
The only thing is we had to stop serving spicy foods for a while here because you wouldn't stop sniffling.
I just have like 24/7 year round, 24/7, 365, like allergies or something. My nose is constantly running. I eat a certain type of food and it just makes it go even crazy. More haywire.
Yeah.
I'm hopefully
maybe
not.
Maybe you have the Lone Star tick.
Oh, hope not. Hopefully I'm not bad today because I've been outside all day and was.
I haven't heard it once.
Getting all kinds of
until
crap.
I said it. And now you're doing it. We just had to put my dog on a prescription strength antihistamine. He's got a rash on his stomach that's so ridiculously bad, and in between his paws are all red and stuff.
That's crazy.
Oh, yeah. For you people who are with a loud chewer, just learn to deal with it. The USDA or FSIS is going to take another look at product of the USA labeling. It seems as if though the articles I read didn't go too into depth, that it seems like this is being misused both in the produce, meat packing, and one of the articles made it sound like in just consumer goods, like product of the USA is being slapped on things when that is not accurate at all. So they said they're gonna take a look at the entire process from beginning to end, how something gets labeled as product of the USA, and get tighter with it, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah. Strangely, like one of the areas of government regulation that I can kind of almost get on board with at times is some of the labeling stuff, just because I feel like so many times people really try to stretch what something is called. Right now, my biggest pet peeve is when you go to the store and you see something that's called a hamburger or bacon or something like that, and it's all plant-based.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, that's not. You could say bacon flavored something or hamburger style patty.
Right.
But to say like hamburger or bacon, put a more specific label on it like that, I don't like that, because to me, to be an actual meat product like that, you actually have to have meat in it. That still can apply when you're just talking meat versus meat, but.
What do you mean that can apply when you're talking meat versus meat?
You can only call something a country ham if it was done in the country, or you have to call it a country style ham.
Gotcha. And on, so I got talked about this with your brother once, and I totally did not see it that way. At first, I was like, if they want to call it meat so the vegans are happier with what they're eating, whatever, who cares? But he said, no, you have to think about like the ranchers, farmers, like meat packers have spent years and years and years cornering this market. You can't let somebody come in with a different product and say it's that. I was like, oh, that makes total sense, actually. Because I don't think, and I think my initial thought process was, they're only getting involved in this because they think people are so stupid that they think that what's that one brand, Beyond Beef, is actually meat when they know it's not. But it's not. It's exactly what Dylan was saying, that they're doing it to protect the meat industry. So I am fine with that as well.
In the cheese world, it's like Velveeta is not cheese.
We talked about that.
They can't call it cheese. It goes into a lot of different industries, food and non-food. But
we talked about that on yesterday's live stream.
Velveeta. Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh,
yep,
cool.
Specifically. Somebody said it's 51% cheese, 49% products that don't mold. that's accurate.
Yeah.
That is definitely accurate.
I like that though, because I know when I look at Velveeta, I know it's not cheese. But it's, to me, it's cheese.
It's great.
I know the difference. It doesn't need to be called cheese. I still like it. I'm going to eat it. It doesn't have to be called Velveeta cheese.
So I think we've done this before, but if you're going mac and cheese, what are you going?
Oh.
Like store-bought. Don't say homemade.
Is there anything besides Kraft?
Oh, God. We were just talking about Velveeta and now you're saying Kraft is better? Kraft doesn't even enter I'd rather not eat mac and cheese than have Kraft mac and cheese. Velveeta is mac and cheese.
Oh, I don't know. I always buy the Kraft box I buy the off brand, whatever the store brand is.
Disappointing. But
I always take extra cheese though and like throw it in. Yeah.
Do you worry about what Leo eats?
No, not at all.
Just like have at it.
My wife is a lot more particular on it. She is the one that feeds him most of the time.
Right.
So she's more careful on what she's giving him and trying to get fruits and veggies and everything in his diet. When it's time to eat with dad,
whatever is available.
Whatever goes. My wife actually, bought donut holes the other day. That's what my son ate this morning for breakfast. And I was shocked because normally that's a dad move.
Okay.
I buy donuts and like, that's like a Saturday morning breakfast.
Right.
I'll feed him whatever. Okay. It doesn't matter to me.
I just think about it a good amount. Specifically, I was listening to a podcast the other day and it was talking about the effects of, is it BCEs or whatever, the stuff that's in plastic. I can't PC something. It's something that's in plastic and plastic degrades and you ingest them over time. And it really affects specifically the hormonal growth of a fetus. And I'm just trying to imagine the nightmare that would be my life if my wife got pregnant, and how anything that could ever possibly be dangerous to a baby, a fetus, would have to be out of the house. Like, she would be drinking out of a stone cup because that's the only, you know, it'd be insane. So
yeah. Well, stone cup would be dangerous because it could absorb everything that was in there.
Stone cup would be dangerous for me because she'd eventually bash me over the head with it because of her. Well, no, I can't say that. I like to make fun of her, but she's not crazy. All right. So acreage data highlight risks to corn ending stocks. That is a really confusing headline. What it basically means is, with the increase in price in corn, they were expecting acreage to vastly expand for people to plant way more corn. They are not finding that. That's not what farmers did for whatever reason. They did increase the acreage, but not as dramatically as they thought. So get ready for corn prices to go up. And as corn goes, so does beef. So our beef prices are not done. They are going to continue to rise. So not fun. It's not going to be a good year for the consumer side of beef.
Yeah. We keep talking about that and where prices are and trying to keep an eye on what the market is as a whole. The only good thing I keep remembering and trying to keep on my mind is a few weeks ago when we had talked about that and then compared it to like the rest of like consumer food products is beef is actually lower than a lot of them right now. So at least that's good. But I think we're just going to continue to see a ton of price increases. We had something else around here talking with our store manager the other day. He was like, yeah, these went up in price. I'm like, really? I'm like, oh, that finally got hit.
Got to it.
I think the manufacturer finally wasn't able to hold back a price increase from tariffs and probably also the shipping costs. Shipping containers are costing like 2 to 3 times as much to get here. At least the good news there is that that may be why beef is still lower, is because a lot of our food production is in the States. Like our beef is mostly coming from us. Our corn, our wheat, everything like that, we produce here in the States. So I don't know. Maybe we'll see some of those food products that are more geared towards our industry here and what we do not rise as fast as some of the others, just because of the freight prices and the whole supply chain as a whole that's kind of struggling right now. And some of those products we have to bring in are going to continue to rise even faster.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, not to get too far into economics, but would it be the worst thing in the world if things just cost a little bit more if we made them here? Right. Like, so, you don't get a new phone every year.
Don't say that.
But before I got this phone, well, that's not fair. Before I switched to a work phone, I hadn't updated my phone in like 5 years, something like that.
Yeah, that's horrible. I don't know how you live.
It's perfectly fine.
No.
You don't need every single. See, here's a way you and I definitely differ. I drive a really old car. I don't care to like update. I don't care about the newest things. I just don't. Technology, I like it. You know, it's convenient. It can help. But I'm not like addicted to it. You go home, take off your shirt, and there's a USB port right in the middle of your chest that you just plug into.
I'm basically Tony Stark.
Yeah. So I don't know. I honestly wouldn't care if things were a little bit more expensive if we manufactured them here. And I don't even know if they would be.
But no, see, the problem is people I think would be okay with stuff being a little more expensive. There's so many things we bring in. You wouldn't be talking about a little bit more expensive. You'd be talking about exponentially more expensive. One, we don't have the capacity to make it all ourselves. And
what you think we can make?
For a reasonable price, 90% of what we import from China.
Okay. So specifically China. Because China's basically consumer goods that we absolutely.
Asia in general.
Okay. So then that changes things because we're talking about computer chips. But we could make those here. My wife used to work for a company called Qimonda in Richmond that made computer chips here.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we could do it all here. It's just going to cost more. like a lot more. Even like
when you look at the tariffs and everything, is it costing more? Mm-hmm. And how long it takes to ship?
I won't use exact numbers, but our leather apron that we have, it's like a third less and has more features to it than what I got quoted out from here in the States.
Or willing to do.
Yeah. Even though we have tons of beef, so we have tons of leather hides and stuff to do it with. But
we probably ship our beef leather over there. They do it and send it back. Crazy. Absolutely crazy. Speaking of leather apron or aprons, we are waiting on you to give your final sign off on the design for the khaki apron.
Okay. Do I have an email waiting for it today? Or
no.
Oh no, then
a while ago.
I don't know. We'll have to talk because I don't think I have anything left in my inbox.
Really?
Well, I have emails left in my inbox, but not for the apron.
Okay.
So if you're waiting on me for something, then it may be a while.
Huh.
We'll have to
That'll be interesting to see where that failed. Cause now that you say that confidently, I'm betting it's me. I'm betting I'm the one holding things up. Thinking that you're the one holding things up.
I could be. I mean, I...
Basically, it's just, do you remember the last pattern we sent you?
No.
No.
Okay. No.
Okay. Then we'll talk after.
Okay.
We're all good. I haven't heard back anything from the American supplier for...
Your ratchet handle?
Or the American-made stuffer. And the guy that I've been working with locally... He has gone like totally dark on me, which is fine. He's got other things. I mean, he's got a full-time job and I know his dad was in town from California. So who knows? But it's just weird that I banged my head against the wall for literally like 6 months talking to people and never getting any interest. Then all of a sudden I got like real good interest from two people and it went at the same time. It was just like, all right. Now, I think the company I was talking to from, I think they're Virginia. I think they're just putting things together. Like they're clearly an engineering firm. I think they're just trying to figure out exactly what it would take.
Yeah. But I don't know. Cause if we can find a place that can actually make our sausage stuffer or something similar in the States, it'd be awesome. I'd love to do it. But the last company we had in town that looked at it, mm-hmm. they gave up. They're like, no, we can't. We can't do this for anything reasonable.
And I think one of the advantages of the company that I was talking to is they are a bigger company. I mean, they had 150,000 square foot. I think that was it.
I think that's what it's going to take is some massive company that has every machine that could make every possible part all in house. Yep. The downside is that instead of us being able to do like a small production run of like a couple hundred of these things, mm-hmm. we're going to have to do a couple thousand of them.
Probably. But one of the things that they did tell us is, hey, if you need to, like, we'll just run them all at once. And then we have space to store them. We'll just send them to you, like, as you need them.
So, yeah.
I mean, there's that. All right. This was interesting. U.S. Food introduces new freezing tech for beef. So this is all proprietary, so I have no real information on it. But what it's supposed to be able to do is they're going to slaughter it, package it in such a, and freeze it in such a way that it's going to improve tenderness drastically to the end user and can keep more beef in the food chain supply at optimal tenderness for longer. So really, really cool. Another interesting like ingenuity thing that this has kind of forced people into. Like it's made people think outside the box a little bit. Or maybe even just accelerated some ideas that they already had. Just like, I mean, when we didn't have grinders last year, we didn't have a vacuum, we didn't have mixers. There's 100 things we didn't have. And then all of a sudden we couldn't rely on who we used to get them from. We're like, forget it. Let's do it ourselves. So kind of knocked everybody out of their comfortable rut. Like if that didn't happen last year, I know we had plans to kind of do some of this, but do you think we would have done all of that in the space of 14, 15 months?
No.
Right.
It would have been spaced out over a number of years and have been like, okay, you know, when we get it. But in this case, it was like, we need it all. We need it now. And let's go.
Yep. But I mean, it's made the year go by. Like I still am in utter disbelief that it's June already.
Yeah.
All right. So last thing I have for the day, and this kind of, I'm assuming everyone's going to know what I'm interested in this for as soon as I talk about it. There is a new company called Mouth Behavior, and that is very close to the mouth feel term that I absolutely despise. I don't know how I feel about the word mouth behavior. I think I hate it more, but I haven't totally fleshed out my thoughts on this. So what Mouth Behavior has done, and they're going to work with another company on some upcoming articles and experiments. So there's some interesting stuff there, but they've broken out people into one of four categories. They're crunchers, smushers, chewers, or suckers. And pretty much everybody more or less falls into one of those. So like if you love like the texture, the crunchy, when you bite into something, you get that satisfying noise, the feeling on your teeth, obviously you're a cruncher. If you like ice cream and other things that you just kind of smush in your mouth, you're a smusher. If you're a big like candy guy or whatever, you're a sucker. And chewers is what I think I am, because I like to chew my food like a lot.
Like just chew, not like something that's going to be like a Starburst you're going to throw in there and it's like chewy. You have to like really chew on it, or it's just like you just chew your food.
No, I think I chew my food more than most people do.
Oh.
Like I think I take extra bites. Now, unless I'm super hungry and it's pizza, because then it's like a bite and down.
I have to remind myself to like chew longer. I get more of the flavor and then I slow down on eating.
Yep.
I find that I overeat a lot if I don't actually
do that.
Yeah, pay attention to what I'm doing. And
so my mother-in-law used to annoy me to eat with her, because all she would do was comment on how fast I would eat my food. So like just constantly, she'd be like, oh my God, he's done already. I'm like, yeah, I eat fast. What do you want? So, but then I was like, all right, forget it. I'm not doing that anymore. So I started paying attention. I started chewing my food more, and I found that I ate less, enjoyed my food more, and I developed this wonderful jawline. So just kidding. Obviously, I'm just kidding. All right. So that's it. That's what I've got. Do you have anything else?
Nothing else here.
All right. Guys, thanks for watching. Go ahead and like if you're watching on YouTube. Leave us a review if you're listening on podcast. Then we'll see you guys next time.
Thanks, everybody.
See you guys.
Thanks for checking out the Meatgistics podcast. To shop everything but the meat, head on over to waltonsinc.com. And to get your meat processing questions answered by experts and enthusiasts alike, head on over to our online community at meatgistics.com. Walton's, everything but the meat.